chap I used to work with, his brother had worked for Lehman's for 25 years. He'd never sold a share. He had basically his entire retirement fund was in Lehman Brothers shares, and he was completely wiped out by it.
Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast, navigating UK tax for expats with LSR partners. Welcome back to the Tax Compass podcast with us, LSR partners. Me, Simon Rue, and my business partner, Laura Sant.
Hi.
Today is employment-related equity. We have a lot of clients who get equity awards in one shape or another. And it's an area where there's often a sort of combined confusion between how does that work in terms of taxes generally? What happens when I get them? What happens when they vest? What happens if they're options? What happens if they're just equity? We see all sorts of weird and wonderful, like different structures. There's stuff to do with what are called enterprise management equity or something.
Yeah.
They're not called that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, EMI.
Yeah. So we're going to break that down in a little bit of detail. Not too much. We can't tell you everything. So, Laura, let's start with your bog standard, what are typically called RSUs, so yep. Restricted stock units.
Yeah. So these, I would say, would generally come from US-based companies. That tends to be a fairly standard.
And all the financial services companies do them. All banks is classic.
Yes. So they, in general, will be, equity awards. So quite often you'll be granted these RSUs, which will generally say that subject to meeting certain criteria, that at the point when they vest, you will be then given the shares.
The underlying stock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think one of the things, so having spent the time I spent in banking, we used to get them, and they were when I worked at Deutsche Bank, they tended to vest. You get them, say, as part of your bonus at the end of the year, and then they would vest like a third, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year.
Yep.
And they're obviously value, so you're incentivized to try and get the share price to go up.
Yeah.
Because you got given a fixed number of them, and so the amount of compensation you got would be dependent on where the share price was.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you're at Deutsche Bank, unfortunately, it was nearly always going in the wrong direction. Nothing to do with me, I'm quite sure. But yeah, they're a way of giving you an incentive for the performance of the company, but also a lock-in because, to your point, you get granted them where you get your bonus, they vest in these periods. If you leave before they vest, you lose them.
Exactly. And as you say, they can have various vesting periods, can't they? Some will be like, you know, every year, some will be every quarter.
And after the financial crisis, like a lot of banks did like 4 year cliff vest because they were so keen to try and keep hold of their employees.
Yeah. But in terms of, I suppose, receiving them, you are receiving them as a result of your employment. So from HMRC's perspective, they're considered as employment income and a taxable as such.
So they on the face of it, they simply go, this is just another form of cash. It's the same. It's just like you're getting it by reason of your employment. Therefore, it's income tax. It's not capital gains tax.
Yeah. And assuming that it's for a public company, they're considered to be readily convertible assets, which means that they're...
At the point of vest.
Yeah. Which means that they are both taxable and nickable from HMRC's perspective.
Nickable being national insurance on them as employment income.
Yes. And what that means is they generally will have to be processed through a UK or through a payroll in order to report and pay any taxes owing. Normally what you would tend to see, so again, it's one of those where in most instances with RSUs, we tend to see that most people will have a sell to cover sort of situation.
I think actually most schemes require it these days.
Yeah, I think I may have seen instances where companies have just IPO'd and the very first vest, they can sometimes just get the cash instead and sell all for that. But
what I meant was that you'll never have a situation where you get given the gross number of shares by your employer and then you have to sort out your own tax. I think they all do it through payroll in terms of the tax component of it.
They will do if they're a major company. You do get certain instances where they're like a small owner managed business and they don't necessarily, like, they're not readily convertible assets. In those sorts of instances, they can be dealt with by the employee through the payroll. But as you say, in the majority of instances that we come across, it all.
Yeah, and I think sort of the takeaway is, if you get RSUs, it's very likely that they'll be dealt with from a tax perspective through payroll. The thing that you need to be a bit careful about is how you set up in your, like, you know, Shareworks is the classic one that a lot of companies use to process all this stuff.
Yeah.
Is what do you do with the sort of net position that you get? So just thinking as a bog standard example, let's say you get 100 shares vest, they'll sell, ignoring National Insurance to make it easier, they'll sell 45 shares, which is 45% tax that you'll almost certainly owe on it.
Yeah.
And then you get given 55 shares into your account as a net position. And then that's then your shares, they've been taxed as employment income, and Bob's your uncle.
Yeah. So what, as in, once you've got the shares, what happens then?
Yes.
So once you've got the shares and they've got the base price.
And what is the base price? Because you haven't paid any money for them.
So the base price will be the market value on the... felt like I was in an exam then. So there'll be the market value on the date that you received them in general.
Yeah, so effectively the taxable, the amount you're taxed on, which is the market value, is what gives you the base price, right?
Yes, exactly. And we just have to go careful because there are some international exceptions to that, but we probably don't have time to go into that sort of depth today. But
Laura, you're learning. We're not doing too much depth.
Excellent, thank you. So you
just... No, I've got these shares, yep. They've vested, they're in my Shareworks account.
Yeah.
I sell them 6 months later.
Yeah.
What's the tax position then?
So when you then sell them later on down the line, you're going to be subject to capital gains tax on the disposal. Again, subject to any sort of international exceptions. And you would pay capital gains tax on the different, assuming the value's gone up, you pay capital gains tax or be subject to capital gains tax on the difference, or it would be chargeable gains that need considering.
Yeah.
Obviously, could sit within your annual exemption. But always thinking about exceptions. So that's the general approach that we would often see,
and this is what I used to do. I was so... you know, you're working for a company. It's great when the share price goes up. It's not so great when the share price goes down. I used to just set my Shareworks account so that sell all and I'll have the cash. Thanks very much. I've got enough exposure and I've got other ones that aren't vested. If they're vested, I'd rather do anything else with the money.
Yeah.
Sort of diversify. I always remember terrible story, actually, after the financial crisis when Lehman Brothers went bust. A chap I used to work with, his brother had worked for Lehman's for 25 years. He'd never sold a share. He had basically his entire retirement fund was in Lehman Brothers shares, and he was completely wiped out by it. And that really stuck with me at the time. I was working in banking and I was like, always sell, stick him in anything else, any other bank or what. If you like bank exposure, just don't work for the sale. We're not financial advisors. I should point that out. But like, why would you give yourself that amount of concentration risk? And that's always stuck with me, because the poor bloke was like, he was about to retire. He was like 50. And he was like, I've got to go back and work for another 10 years.
So. Wow. I would say, but that being said, we have a significant number of clients with a particular firm who's admittedly in, and we're not talking about options yet, but maybe in options that it pretty much corresponds to, and they've held on, and now the share price has gone
bananas. Yeah, and it's
millions and millions that they could be making once they finally do something with it.
So we've spoken about sort of your standard RSUs. You've just mentioned options there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about options. Now, I think what's interesting, I was speaking to someone from that particular company yesterday, and they were quite interesting because they've only been working there for like, I think, 2 years, and they're quite young. And it's interesting that company has gone through that period of maturity. They're now, you know, they've now been listed quite a while.
Yeah.
And generally, all of the employee-related equity has switched to RSUs. What's interesting is we have a number of clients who work for that company right from the get-go, when they were just a startup, basically. And what's interesting is that startups tend to use options, especially when they're not listed, as a way of giving incentive to like early stage employees. And to your point about people making gazillions of dollars out of situations, it's quite often around the options.
Yes.
But the interesting one with options, isn't it, is that we've got this when we were talking about RSUs, it's quite straightforward because it's like you get granted an equity award, it vests at the point of vest because it's now a listed company. It's very simple. That's the taxation point. You get taxed over the vesting period. And Bob's your uncle.
Yep.
Options is slightly more complicated, isn't it?
Yeah. So with options, you are granted them. They will vest at a particular point, and generally from the point that it's vested, you have the right to be able to exercise the options at a future date. But say, for example, they vest and you choose not to exercise the options, you haven't physically had anything. So there's the tax point hasn't really arrived. So when it comes to options, they get taxed, even though the earnings period of the option is between grant and vest date, the tax point of the options is when they're exercised. Again, there's some international exceptions when it comes to the options side of things.
But that's interesting, isn't it? Because what we're saying is the vesting period is the taxation period in most circumstances.
Yes.
And certainly from a UK perspective.
Yes.
It's just focused on the UK. But you only pay the tax when you actually exercise the option. The concept being that an option isn't readily convertible to cash. So it would be unfair to tax you because you can't raise the money.
Yes.
Just having the option.
Yeah.
So they said, well, we'll tax you when you exercise it because that's when you actually get real shares that you can sell to pay the taxes effectively. But the earnings period could be over here, but you get taxed 3 years later. I mean, we've been helping someone who was like exercising options that had been vested for, 7 years or something.
Yeah.
But the tax point was then.
The other thing as well to bear in mind when it comes to options, whereas with RSUs, you tend to get issued with shares, as a primary point of call, and then you sell them down the lines. Quite often with options, you don't always have to do this, but quite often with options, people tend to exercise at a point when the share price is quite high and advantageous to do so. And so they will they'll sell all instead of sell to cover, which means that all shares get liquidated, and it's effectively just subject to income tax. So there's no capital gains tax consideration in those sorts of instances.
They often look at them and certainly the ones that we deal with a lot are very much they view them the same as RSUs in terms of when you exercise. It's just people will say I can either exercise options or I can sell some stock I've got from previous vestings, and it's quite interesting, isn't it, because you're absolutely right to raise that, because it's a behavioral thing that has no fundamental basis, but it's just naturally what people
do.
And the good thing, to your point, is that one of the complications is that whole mix of, okay, I've got tax to income tax here, but now I've created a potential capital gains tax liability in the future because the share changes its nature from the vesting point onwards, because it was income before it vested and at the point of vest, and then it's capital after that. Whereas with the options, people are like, I'm actually exercising the options because I want some cash.
Yeah.
If I don't want any cash, why would I exercise the options?
Yeah.
So it'd be weird for people to exercise the options and then say, oh, just have the shares thing.
The other thing that we could do sometimes see with options, so with the RSUs, obviously the vesting date will happen whilst you're employed, because generally if you leave a firm, it's not going to vest. But what you can sometimes have with options is that these shares have vested and you've left the company, and then people might actually exercise the options after they've left.
Yeah.
And then that can sometimes cause payroll issues as well.
Well, you end up with these trailing payrolls, don't you, of people that have like, oh, I left that company 5 years ago, and then suddenly it's like, oh, I've exercised and it goes to your payroll.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the sort of baseline of employment-related equity. Let's just spend a little bit of time about the one key complication, which is where you move around during the vesting period. Now, I guess just before that, you look at it, and I often think about this in terms of like top slicing relief, which is another topic which we're not going to get into now. If we get to the stage of having to do podcasts about insurance contracts, we're in real trouble.
You say that we were talking about it earlier this week.
We'll need to get our whiteboard out for that. What's interesting, just coming back on the tax point. You could have, I mentioned earlier, the idea of a 4-year cliff vest.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important people understand that you don't get value for the 4 years you've had to work, in the sense that it's not like they look at it and go, we're going to take that. Let's say it vests and it's worth 100. They don't say, we're going to go back and look at it and pretend that 25 is in each year, and therefore you might not pay, you know, yeah, have lower tax rates. It all gets taxed on a cliff basis in the year.
Yes.
So even though you've had to work for 4 years, it all gets taxed when you exercise, when you vest, right?
Yeah.
Or you exercise options.
Yes.
So coming back to the point around moving around, just let's start with RSUs. This is a key question to a guy I was speaking to this week who is moving from the US to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
He was concerned about what would happen if I've got RSUs that I've been awarded when I've been in the US, but yep, now I'm going to move to the UK. What happens then?
So I suppose from a UK tax perspective, HMRC will look across the vesting period. And I say vesting period, it's usually grant to vest dates, but in situations where we have re-grants, it's whenever the vesting commencement date is.
Let's not go into that.
Okay. So grant to vest, say, for example, you talked about a four-year period. If, for example, you were UK tax non-resident for 2 years of the, let's say...
Yeah, 2 years of the 4 years.
2 years of the 4 years. UK tax resident for the other 2 years of the 4 years, then the starting point is that you'll be taxable on 50%, which relates to the period.
It's effectively time apportioned to where you have your residence during the vesting period.
Yes. There's also, I suppose, a bit of a look in terms of if you were non-resident at the point when you're vesting and you had non-UK work days, you know, there's potential additional relief that
it's one of those things, isn't it, where the base case is, just think of it as a time apportionment thing.
Yeah.
But then bear in mind that these things can get incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
And there are other reliefs and there are treaty issues that come into it.
Like remittance basis claims and the new FIG regime and all sorts.
Yeah. But I think what's been interesting there is that we've been doing quite a bit of work recently, haven't we, where clients are looking at being non-resident at a point when they exercise stuff and actually looking back over the vesting period and using sort of some of the OECD language to argue that actually there was less time in the UK because of some of their commentary around how options particularly should be taxed. Yeah. So I guess again, the thing to take out of it is, yes, on the face of it, it's relatively straightforward, but as I think people who've looked at a lot of our episodes realize that on everything, you can start with it's quite simple on the face of it until it's not simple at all, because there are all these other changes you have to think about.
Yes.
So I guess this has been a good one just to be able to say the baseline is it's taxed as income. It's viewed from an HMRC perspective as just more employment income. But then you've also got to think about capital gains tax if you hold onto the shares post-vest.
Yeah.
And then if you start moving between different countries, it's important to make sure it's being done correctly. Because I think the final point maybe is to say, generally speaking, if you work for a company and the company moves you from one location to another, in an ideal world, you move your payroll at exactly the time that you move.
Yes.
But actually, that often doesn't happen. Sometimes it can be because someone is sent somewhere for a 3-month short-term secondment. Yeah. It suddenly turns into something longer. And we do quite a lot of work, don't we, where we're reallocating periods based on proper residency rather than what payroll have done. So it's important not to assume that payroll are getting it right. You might be overpaying taxes if you're not careful.
And unfortunately, a few instances underpaying taxes as well, where people have moved on to another country's payroll and haven't actually broken residence.
Yeah. So if you've got questions on stock-related equity, stock-related income, then do get in touch. We have a nauseating amount of experience in this area, given our client base. It can be, I was going to say it can be quite rewarding, but I don't think it is really. I want spreadsheets. But
I know I find it quite rewarding. Yeah.
We're back to our life choices conversation again. Hope you've enjoyed it. Keep tuning into our podcast. And if you would like to give us some ideas of what we should be talking about, please do email podcast@lsrpartners.com. And please like and subscribe and send on to all your mates. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Compass podcast brought to you by LSR Partners, where we help you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. Book a call with us. Details are in the show notes.